What is up, guys? Welcome to the first episode of Deciphering Dynasty. And today we're going to be looking at dynasty audits. How do you evaluate your dynasty teams? I'm here with Leo P, one-time senior writer, podcast host for DLF, and an FSWA finalist. Literally, he is the GOAT. He is the GOAT of Dynasty. That's what we call him here on the channel, on the app, and Twitter if you're on there. But we're going to be diving into live questions, Dynasty theories here in the series as we kind of dive into it. In this first episode, though, I wanted to pick his brains about how do you audit your Dynasty team properly. How do you do that? How do you evaluate? Now that it's January, we're looking at our Dynasty team. So first segment one is evaluation. Now, we're going deep on this thing. This is no flashy buy sell video here. This is deep dynasty analysis stuff that I don't think it's covered enough. And that's why we brought Leo on, because Leo is absolutely fantastic at that. So I wanted to give the topic, and then Leo can kind of take us where he wants. He can give us a little brief intro. He can give us a little Oscar. Hey, I'm Leo. This is what he wants to go through. And we're going to talk about the four C's, and what he wants is four lenses that really build a base for any type of evaluation. When the evaluation is used, these are the steps that make up that process. So he wants to kind of walk us through the four C's of what we're looking at, what we're talking about with dynasty evaluation there. So Leo, thank you for joining me on this adventure. And go ahead and take it away on the four C's, or just in general, a little bit of dynasty background.
Yeah. So folks that follow me on Twitter, they know I'm kind of a niche guy. Everything for me is philosophy. Everything for me is how do you take theoretical and how do you make it practical? Because we all talk about evaluations or processes or strategies, but it's great to talk about it out here, but how do you actually apply it to, to your teams, to your leagues? And I'll give you an example. So I'm in New England, and right now it's, 10 degrees outside. It feels like, Alaska out here. Well, you were in Alaska, right? So you would, you would know that cold temperature. But anyway, in New England, I'm driving around and I'm listening to EEI, is the Boston radio station in the area. And they were introducing the new coach, Gerard Mayo, and Robert Kraft was there, and they did a presser, and EEI carried it live. And what I found really interesting, and the reason I'm kind of going off a little bit, is the first six questions were basically, who's going to be your GM? And who's going to be your offensive coordinator? Who's going to handle the defense? Who are you bringing on board? And all they wanted to talk about was, right now it's an evaluation. Right now we're evaluating everything. They must have said evaluation 32 times in the first six questions. Yeah. And it just stands out to me that everybody evaluates differently. Everybody has a different lens. What are you evaluating? So in this time of year, we all talk about evaluating your dynasty rosters. Every podcast that's out there is doing a little dive on how do you, evaluate your roster. But to me, is how are you really evaluating? What are you doing? So when we got together, we started talking about what does this podcast look like. I really wanted to kind of take a dive into, all right, so if you're going to evaluate, there's a time-tested method to how you would evaluate things. So let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah. Let's get into that. And one of the things that I've always used in business from a leadership position, and it translates to fantasy football, is the 4C method. And that leads off with context. If you're going to evaluate anything, let's talk about context, because context, and you'll hear this over the course of the pod as we do more and more episodes, context matters probably more than anything. And so when you're talking about context, well, if we're going to evaluate, so where are you coming from? Are you rebuilding? Are you chasing a title? What were your expectations? All of that really matters when you start to slather on that layer of context, and you've got to break it down specifically. These are the circumstances surrounding my team, so that you can start to measure output and process, understanding the parameters around it.
And I think it's important too. So when you talk about context, I think that's super important, because I think sometimes we're not honest with ourselves too, where our team is at, like where we're at with our strength, our roster strength, understanding your approach. Some of us don't have approaches, especially if you're new to the format, which I love dynasty managers that are new to the format, because I feel like they can be taught different things. They're not stuck in their old ways, kind of, right? Like they're not, hey, this is how I always run these teams, and it's ever changing. So I do agree, having those approaches, understanding the context of what you're looking at, where's your strength, and there's all kinds of like tools out there for them to do that. Like there's definitely tools. RayGQ has a great database. I love Ray. I like his site. Dynasty Daddy is one of my favorites. There's a lot of different tools out there, but you have to figure out where that strength comes from too, as a dynasty manager, as you build your rosters. So I think that is important. I understand that. I love that you put league activity in there too. I think that's key. Like you have to know your league activity, because you need to know where you can trade, who you can trade with as we get into this stuff, as we dive into it. So that's context. Any more else on context there?
No, just what you said, the league activity is huge. And I think league activity comes into play no matter what we're going to talk about over the next few episodes, because you know, if you're rebuilding, the amount of trades that are attainable just based on overall league activity is huge. And if you're in a league that doesn't have a ton of activity, that has to change your entire approach, because you can't. One of the greatest things about Dynasty format is that you can swing and miss. It's okay, especially if you're in an active league, because you're going to be able to make up for that with moves down the road. If you trade out of the first, well, you can trade back in 3 months. You know, you can make these moves if you have an active league. If you don't, every move is measured so much with so much more importance, because you don't have that mechanism to offset a poor decision. And we all make them.
And we all have those poor decisions. And we always remember the poor decisions. The good ones we never remember. I still remember I traded a first for Josh Rosen. And it was funny. I was on a dynasty consultation like this with someone, and he asked me what my worst trade was. And the young kid didn't even know who Josh Rosen was. That's how you know that was a bad trade. When the guy doesn't even know the guy you traded for, and he was in the league the last 5 years. I mean, that's a problem there. So we all have them there. All right. Next C for you is content.
Content. Yep.
What do we mean by content?
So content basically breaks down what were the processes that you applied during the course of the year. Okay. It's the decisions that you made. And for me, I'm a huge notebook guy. And anybody that follows me knows that. And what I do is I tend to write context in with my content. So like if I'm making a move, I write the hows and whys behind it. If I'm making a trade, I want to write the reason that led me to make that decision, so that when I evaluate it, it's just not a, okay, I traded player A for player B. It's, I did that, but these were the reasons why I did that, because you can't go back and check your process if you don't know what led you to make that move. And if you make that move in September and you're grading yourself in January, you really need to know what prompted you in that moment to trade for that player, to change your roster, to change your approach, to pivot to a different strategy. All that matters. So that goes into content. I want to know the reason that the moves were made, the processes were applied.
I think there's another area, because I stole this from you, full disclosure here, but one thing that I've been doing a lot over the last couple of years, and I've been kind of diving into it when I talk about rebuilding and going over your dynasty rosters. So I keep a spreadsheet, because, and now don't tell all the spreadsheet nerds I have a spreadsheet, because then like Dave Wright and all those guys will use to make fun of me. But I do have a spreadsheet now. And so what I do is I have a spreadsheet. I actually wrote a Football Guys article on this. You can steal the spreadsheet that I have. And I have all the teams of my leagues in there, and I actually track their moves as well. So I go through and I track my league mates of like guys that they trade for. Do they trade for veterans? Do they trade for this? One thing that I've actually found the most fun and actually most beneficial is I really track the rookie drafts. Because in Dynasty, that's really kind of like, where do these guys go with their picks? Do they like running backs? Will they target those high-end quarterbacks and they go after them really hard and super flex? You know, are they willing to take risks? Are they the risk guys? Are they pick-ins? Are they the Quentin Johnsons? Will they go after those guys? So for me, content for me has really applied now to my league mates now. And then as you go and you join these leagues and you know these guys, that helps you make your decisions, because then you know, hey, I need a running back. Which guy hates running backs? Okay, I can probably pry this guy away for cheaper than I would be able to pry from this guy. And he's a deal maker. He's made already 10 deals. I know that he's going to be able to do that. So that's one thing I've definitely stole from you the last couple of years, reading your articles and going through it. And I think that matters too. Like, knowing your league mates is probably the most important thing. I think it gets glossed over a lot in the era of keep trade cut and constant dynasty rankings changing and all this stuff. The most important thing is the tendencies of your league and what they want to do.
Yeah, and that was music to my ears. I mean, I've been preaching that for I don't know how long. Mm-hmm. And to hear some folks, you now and some others, say that they implement that they use that they find value in that. I mean, that's good to hear. And it is glossed over, and it's not something that is used. It's one of the we all talk about values, and we all have certain strategies that get used over and over again. But where the true value is in a psychological aspect. Knowing your league mates' tendencies is huge. Rookie drafts, exactly. If you have, I always try to pinpoint the drafter that whose draft board looks the closest to mine. Because that's the person I have to pay attention to. Because if they move one pick in front of me, now we've got a problem. So I always like to identify who's the person whose draft board generally looks the same as mine or uses the same resources I do. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, we don't have enough time in a day to do everything we need to do if we're managing four or five teams, right? Four or five rosters. So we utilize folks who do this for a living or who are better at it than we are. And if there's somebody in my league that listens to the three podcasts I listen to or uses the tools at a website that I use, I got to make sure I'm keeping track of where they are in that draft and how active they're being and what moves are they making. If it's not draft picks, what trades are they making? Because they're probably going to target somebody that I would be willing to make a move for or wanting to make a move for, you know, in the next trade window.
I'm so glad you brought it up too. Everybody out there that's listening either on the pod later or tonight, knowing where they get their information from is super important, because if they're getting it from player profiler or their DLF or maybe Football Guys or wherever, like all of the brands, if you guys haven't noticed the brands and like the podcast, they kind of morph their opinions together a little bit. You'll get like, this group does not like Jordan Love. This group does not like this. And then you follow that and you can use that to your advantage. Like, you're going to find that, you know, group speak definitely happens with pretty much every company. I know, like at Football Guys, there's a big push for Russell Wilson this last year being a very like value. And that started with our owner. Like, he's like, yeah, I think he could be a value. Then it kind of trickles down. So knowing if someone is at Football Guys or if they watches their content, you could probably use that against them. And you might be able to get a little bit more out of Russell if you're going to trade him to that guy. And so that's, I think, is very important. Like, that's where the edge is at. I think one thing that people forget, Dynasty a few years ago was very new. Dynasty's not really new anymore. Dynasty, like a lot of people play it, there's not so much edge with like market, microtransactions, buy, sell windows, like, because everybody does that content. Type in YouTube right now and go Dynasty Buys, and you're going to get like 27 videos in the last 2 weeks. Where the value's at, and where like there's some a little bit where you can kind of get on your league mates is knowing what moves they make, tracking those things. Now that is where it has to shift. I think your mindset's got to shift to that.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll add is it's not that difficult. Like, if you go to my Twitter feed, I've got a thread and just look for notebooking under, you know, Sega FF. You'll find a thread that's, you know, 10 or 11 post long that'll give you the specifics as to what to track and what the important aspects are. But it's not that difficult. I always say that if you have four or five leagues, don't try four or five leagues at one time if you've never attempted this. Pick your favorite league. Pick one league or the league that you want to rebuild in, the league where you think you're going to have the most activity in. Pick that league and then start slowly.
Yeah,
you can go back through history. I mean, I'm not that familiar with Sleeper, being an old guy. I prefer MFL, but with MFL, you can go back and look at the last five drafts, right? Yeah. And you can kind of map out, okay, this guy consistently took quarterback, and you can just make a couple little notes. And next thing you know, all of a sudden it becomes easier, and it's not that labor or time intensive, and you're able to gain so much information from that, that all of a sudden, you know, you start to feel like you're pulling strings to the point because you've profiled your league mates.
Yeah. And another thing too, for those of you, I know we're going to get onto the third C. I knew we're always going to have these conversations, Leo. We're going to go off on tangents, which is good, because I think this is good and it's helping people. I have a Mac, so it helps me. It's easier for me, but you can go on Sleeper on your guys's computer. If you have one, take a screenshot of the draft board. Like, just boom. Okay. Every year you have that screenshot. I know on MFL, in the leagues that I'm in there, I have one more. I'm hanging on with one more league on there. I know you can go back and look, but even on this one, like, you can go back and you can track and take screenshots, and then you can just post them in there. You can put them in a Word doc or whatever you want to do. And that does help. And it actually, for the next topic, I didn't even mean to do this. I'm just lucky as a host. We would go into consequences, but you can see where you screwed up, right? Like, you get to go. It is so important to go back to your drafts and see where you messed up. And you might not like it, but it's definitely one of those things that helps build you as a fantasy manager.
Yeah, absolutely does. Not only the drafts, but for me, I like to keep, when I'm making notes, like I talked about, you know, context, content, when I'm making notes, the reasons why I'm doing something, I also like to put down my goals for the year. Mm-hmm. What do I want to achieve? What process do I want to implement? Am I going to go youth heavy this particular roster? Am I going to go zero running back? And, you know, is my goal to really build wide receivers to the point that, you know, I have more depth than I know what to do with? Yeah. You know, whatever your goal is, write that down, the reason why you want to do it. Because when you go back and look at consequences, you need to see, why did you do it? And this failed. Okay, I went zero running back. This was an utter failure. Here's where it failed. Maybe the process itself wasn't terrible. Maybe the process definitely had value, but the individual choices I made and the reasons why I made these choices were terrible. And now I know I need to improve that.
Yeah. And I think to your point, just to give context for players, possibly, like, you go zero running back, you know, it's a very viable strategy unless you miss on those running backs, right? Like, and then what I would do is, if you're looking at it, it's not that you missed. Okay, why did these running backs not hit? Okay, was it scheme? Was it profile? Am I missing there? And if you go zero running back, you still have chances to add running backs to your roster. As long as you hit those other parts, it's probably not a dead roster. Where if you go like zero wide receiver, you build running back heavy, that's where dynasty can get tough, because those age and the value dips there. But yeah, I think it's really important to understand, because I really think that you can build a dynasty team anyway. I still believe that. I don't think like zero running backs the perfect way, or, you know, first year struggles the perfect way, or I like anchor running back, but those are not perfect ways. Anybody can win however you do it, but understanding kind of the consequences to it, why you miss those type of things, it just builds you up. But that's the other thing. Don't be joining like 15 leagues, y'all. Like, you can't be doing all this. Like, you're degenerates out there, because you can't do it. And I'll be the first one to admit, I got in way too many leagues a couple years ago because it was COVID and I was in those leagues. But you can't do the type of things we're talking about. But you can do it in one league, and your home league or whatever, your home dynasty league or whatever you're trying to do there. But understanding the impact of the things you made is important there. And then we have change. So the last one here is change. What do we mean by change?
So when you look at, when you go through and you look at the consequences, and you say, and we're using zero running back as an example. So now what do I change? So when you look at it, you say, did the process ultimately work, but my decisions failed? If I had gone these three running backs instead of the three I picked, it would have been a prosperous season. I would have attained all of the goals I set down ahead of time. Well, what do I need to change? So the process worked. I just need to fine tune my selection. I need to figure out how I evaluate, what sites I use, what tools I use to put me in a better position to make that process work. Now, if you look at it and you say, okay, that process was broken, it wouldn't have mattered who I picked. That just wasn't a good philosophy, or I just didn't enjoy it. It was way too much waiver wire scouring. It wasn't how I want to enjoy my team. I want to have a stronger running back stable. That just wasn't fun for me. Well, now you know the process is flawed. What are you going to change? Yeah. What are you going to do? And have a plan, because it's secular. What you plan in January becomes what your goals are in September. And then you're able to go back, and it just, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're able to go back and you're able to check everything because you're laying the foundation in January and February.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, understanding kind of like what that next plan is, what we're going to help you with, like understanding, like we really want to dive into how do we take those steps. And we're going to start that. We're going to be doing like, all right, you know, honest assessment. First up, what are you looking at? And over the next few months, we're going to be talking about, okay, you evaluated. Now what's next? How do you target that roster? What do you do there? But I like that. I like these four C's. Again, you know, when you're looking at context, content, consequences, and change, understanding how to build that roster, see it. But I think the most important thing for me, the tracking thing is obviously important, but also like having self-awareness of where you messed up. And I think, and understanding, like not having the bravado be like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so didn't get hurt or whatever. Like, okay, why did my team not make it as far as it did? And don't do that again. Cause I've seen plenty of managers the next year, they do the same process and like, oh, it's going to work out this time. And it's like, no, it's not. It is not working out this time. And you have to be very careful with that. But before we move on, we are going to dive into kind of how we evaluate now. So, you know, Leo's going to go over kind of what you should be looking at, how you evaluate. But I want to tell you about Notion. Notion is in a single space where you can think, write, plan, capture thoughts, manage projects, or even run an entire company and do it exactly the way you want. Notion's mission is to make tool making. And it believes that if they, every person in business can tailor software to the problems, the world as a whole will be better at solving problems. So with project templates to help you get you started, easy to use editing tools, highly customizable pages, Notion is the best way to manage those projects. Now, you're supporting Endeavor Royale by clicking our link. So if you go into the description on YouTube, we have there. If you join today, you'll be supporting us. You can head to the affiliate Notion at Debbie Royale. You can join us there. So go use Notion. I know that Brandon Lejeune from Debbie Deep Dive, one of my favorite people out there, he uses Notion. It's a really good database out there, especially if you're a content creator. There's a lot of fun things you can do. But let's digress into out of the ad read and go into, all right, when we're evaluating, there's three types of evaluations we kind of put on here. So let's start with goal-based evaluation. So what do we mean by goal-based evaluation?
So goal-based is, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's kind of funnels right into what we just talked about. What are you going to change? And you write down, you know, what your changes are going to be. So you also have what your goals are. Everybody's goal is to win a championship, right? I mean, bottom line, that's what you're playing for. That's what you want to do, whether it's that year or you're on a three-year plan, whatever it looks like, your goal is to win.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you have smaller goals with, you have a subset within that main goal. Do I improve my quarterback depth on my roster? Am I better at picking a starting lineup because, you know, my wide receiver stable is so deep that I'm picking guys that are scoring 7 points a game and I've got guys with 25 points on my bench. So my goal is to improve from a 70% accuracy score with setting the right lineup to 85, whatever that looks like. You set that at the beginning of the year. And then at the end of the year, you go back and you look. I mean, this is data that I can count.
Yeah.
Did I meet the goals that I set? I wanted to, in head-to-head competition, I wanted to win 11 games in my league. If you're playing with victory points, I want to get, you know, and I don't know if that's a thing on Sleeper or not, but in NFL it was, where you could basically, kind of like hockey, right? You get an extra point for being the high score in the league. Playing against the mean, I guess, is another way to look at it. And so my goal is to have a certain outcome based on the criteria. You know, I want to have a wide receiver, a running back, and a quarterback that all finish in the top five in their respective position categories. Whatever those goals are, now you have something that you can measure actual statistics against.
Yeah. I think it's important. Like, I think we fall in that trap of always measuring whether we win or lose. And I think for Dynasty, redraft, of course, like if you're not winning, you know, if you're not first, you're last. Ricky Bobby said that a long time ago. We still believe it. But in Dynasty, I mean, there are teams definitely where it's like, hey, you know what? We improved on our win total. But, you know, it's such a subjective thing, though, because if you're not doing median scoring or victory points or those type of things, like, you could just get really good matchups. Like, I had a team make the playoffs that had no business making the playoffs whatsoever. And it was really just based on matchups this year. And it was an underperforming squad. So, like, to me, that was a loss. But in the win column, we had more, you know, than we did last year. I think for me, you did put activity levels on here. And I do want to, like, really – I like the idea of being more active in leagues. Now, you might have to get out of some of your leagues. Like, if you can only be active, like, to me, you know, I think under 8 is still doable for people. I mean, depending on, like, where they're at, if it's just dynasty, if that's it, and there's no crazy John Bosch rules or anything crazy out there that you're trying to navigate, I still think that. But I think if people really increase their activity, I mean, in reality, get trades done, you're sending a lot of trades out. You have to be as active as you possibly can. So I think if dynasty managers increase their activity a little bit more, I think they could improve their teams a lot more.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that can be part of your goal-based, you know, assessment too, because you can say, I want to complete 10 trades in the off season. I want to make sure I have no blind bid waiver money left by the end of the year. You can set those parameters that you can measure against that force you to be more active, because now you have a goal. I want to complete 5 trades by the end of September. And now you have a measuring stick that, again, and it's not set in stone, right? You're setting these goals for yourself so that you can move the finish line to some degree. If all of a sudden your September is terrible, well, now I'm going to increase my total for October. You know, you're constantly assessing. So we're talking about a year-end evaluation in January. You should be evaluating periodically, continuously throughout the year to see if you're meeting, if you're on the right trajectory for your final outcome. And you should be adjusting in season. I mean, again, we're talking end of year adjustments, evaluations, but in truth, it's year round.
I think I love that idea of setting a limit for trades. I think that's a good idea. I think, hey, like, I want to try to get 5 trades done, because you know what? The more you increase your activity, the more the league increases their activity too. Like, you know, for me, I see a lot of movement going on the playoffs if there's no deadline, or right before the deadline, or right at the rookie drafts. But like right now, I would argue, I know a lot of dynasty leagues are dead right now, but this is the time to be active. Like, this is the time to kind of get rid of those roster cloggers off your roster, go get thirds and try to kind of just do your best to try to get as much activity as you can. Like, I would argue trying to get one trade done in January would be a good goal right now. Like, go try to get something, just a small piece, something. Like, you're probably not going to get moved like a huge piece right now. But thinking ahead, trying to find that, I think activity levels is something that I personally want to do more of, kind of trade more, do those type of things. But setting a limit, like a goal of like 10 trades this year, I think is good. I think it's good because it's good to get kind of your team and replenish those rosters too. So that's goal-based. Like, hey, what's our goal? We identify this is what we want to do now. January, this is what we're looking at. And then we have process-based. So what do we mean when we're talking about process-based?
So you're basically looking, again, at whether or not the strategies, the processes you applied, were they successful? And so let's tie it all together. We just talked about a goal-based evaluation. You say, I'm going to try to get 5 trades done before our rookie draft. And the details that go into that can be about your process. So I think I got some notes for a little bit later in the show. And you deal with the heavy hitters, right? So that can be your process. I want to get 5 trades done. I haven't been an active trader. So how does that work? You can set the goal, I want to get 5 trades done, but it's not as smart as making a smart goal where you say, okay, I'm going to have a process where I'm going to knock on the doors of the 3 most active traders in the league, because I know that increases my chances of getting a deal done. So that's your process now. Not only do you have the goal completing 5 trades, but my process now is to target you know, the 3 most active traders in the league. And now you can gauge that. Did that work? Yeah. And if it works, well, now you know you've got a process that was successful. If it doesn't work, well, now, okay, so that was it because I crafted my, you know, was the trade absolutely terrible? Was the initial offer, did I just totally get the guy to shut down because it was such a terrible opening offer? Was mm-hmm. there negotiation? You know, did we counter four or five times? Even if you don't get the deal done, if you go through four or five iterations of a trade and you negotiate, that's still improving your skill base to craft the deal. And it's still something that I would take value out of. Even if you don't get the deal completed, you just became better at negotiating a deal with that experience.
And if you're new to Dynasty or newer to Dynasty, trading is the hardest process, in my opinion. It was the hardest for me to kind of, because you don't want to lose a trade. Now, it's subjective losing or winning a trade. Like, that is very subjective, because a trade now in a year, it'll be flipped. That's why I always laugh on social media or Twitter or whatever when someone posts a trade and someone just gets gassed. And then like a year later, it's like, oh, wait, that actually was the good side. Like, that's the thing about it. But you will get nervous because, you know, you don't want to be that guy in the group chat that's getting roasted and, oh, that's bad value. So I love what you're saying about kind of executing it and then understanding why didn't it work. And again, we were talking about tracking your areas. I will track trades that I don't complete. Like, oh, or if a guy, like, you know, sends me an offer for a player, I'll mark that he's interested. I know on Sleeper you can do that. I know MFL probably doesn't have that capability, but Sleeper will be like, oh, I like this guy. Don't do that though. Like, I don't like interested in, because I don't want someone to know that I'm really interested in that player. I'll keep that to myself as I'm trying to maneuver a trade. But I will keep, like, hey, you offer me, you want this guy. Okay. I'll keep that in back of my mind. I'll put it in my chart. I'll put it here. Hey, my spreadsheet, this is a player that maybe he could be targeting. So if my plan's not working, or if my team is, you know, I'm slowly dipping down, I know at some point he can't. Now, it's not gonna be the same offer. It's not maybe gonna be the same value, but it at least gives me a starting point. It gives you a runway. Okay, I can go target these guys. I focus my attention on this, my process. I know I can go there. And sometimes I'm sure Leo has this, and you know, when he played in those a lot of his leagues, if I need to get a trade done, I'm gonna go to the guy I always get a trade done with. And that's just kind of how I do it. I'm not gonna kind of maneuver, because you could be sitting hours negotiating with some guy that, you know, is not even going to respond back to you. And it's mm-hmm. just like, I'm not going to make a trade for you. I'm going to craft a trade for the guy that I always trade with. It'll help his team. It's going to help my team. And sometimes that's just how it has to be done.
Yeah. And you can learn the little nuances of each manager in your mm-hmm. league. I always say that hesitancy and urgency always lie just beneath the surface of every negotiation. Mm-hmm. You may have a manager in your leagues. You may be getting advice from a site that you listen to, because I see it quite often. Always ask for a third, right? And it's even something I preach, that when you're rebuilding, always try to get that additional pick, because that keeps you draft active when you have assets to move at draft time. You always want to be a player with assets at draft time. But you may have a manager in your league that absolutely runs for the hills whenever you ask for that additional third, like, oh no, that's it, that's the deal breaker, and shuts down. And if you notate that and you're aware of that, then you know, I was going to make three deals. Well, two of them fell through with the same manager, because both times I asked for a third, because that's what the podcast I listened to said to do. Well, now you're able to evaluate your process and say, one, either I don't want to take everything that podcast says as gospel, or I need to learn from this, because it's that's still a good process, but this particular manager doesn't work for. And you can keep track of that instead of just, well, that trade didn't work, and you walk away and you've gained nothing from it.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you there. Especially just understanding, like, you know, it is all a process. You're going to hear that a little bit. You said smart goal earlier. It knocked me back a little bit. As an educator, I hate that word. I hate smart goals. We got to build these smart goals out here. But understanding what those goals are and how you utilize them is for sure. And you get them in. Remember, you can all say we have a goal. You have to actually implement it. Like, I have a goal to lose 20 pounds. I got to do it based on this. Like, you know, I want to be more active in my league. Well, just spamming three trade offers is not necessarily active. Like, doing it with a purpose and a plan, I think, is important. All right, let's get into outcome based, and then we're going to get into trade. So everybody watching, we are going to do a little bit of a trade segment. After this, we're going to talk about kind of our philosophy of trades. We're going to open up to you guys if you have some trades. I know we have a few in the comments already. You could drop them in the comments if you want some trades that you have. Just provide as much context as you can. We're talking about context, like, you know, league type, you know, what kind of your roster maybe looks like, where you're thinking about your process. So if you want to drop any now, you can, and we'll get to them towards the back end in the next 10 minutes or so. But the last one we have, you know, outcome-based evaluation. And this is a pretty simple one, but this is like, hey, you know, what does it look like, right?
Yeah, and I think the most important part of this is just an honest look and don't try to fudge the outcome, right? Like a lot of times we don't want to fail. So we say, well, it really wasn't that bad. It's honest evaluation. And I always say that a second set of eyes in this particular evaluation is always a good tool, right? Phone a friend.
Yeah.
And just say, you know, especially somebody. So I like to have two sets, right? I like to have an echo chamber friend that's going to confirm my biases because they kind of look at things the same way. And then I like to reach out to somebody that looks at things through a completely different lens so that mm-hmm. I can kind of prove my outcome really is my outcome. And I'm not just looking at it through, you know, as a glass that's half full as opposed to a glass that's half empty.
Yeah. So I have two. And I'll even tell you guys who he is. Sam Wallace from MB Fantasy Life. He's a very dynasty oriented, like kind of a thinker, kind of like me. So similar to you. And I have Jay Stein and he does analytics and I hate analytics. I mean, I don't hate analytics out there. Don't yell at me, but I don't understand it to a point to where I feel comfortable using that for an evaluation. I understand it's beliefs. I know people are yelling at PFF the last couple of days, but like, I think that there's value to it. That's not my strength. So I tend to stay away from it because I evaluated that. That's not my process. My process is different. But I use Jay and I say, hey, Jay, what would you say here? Because he does this really big dynasty trade evaluation chart for us at Football Guys. And he kind of really dives into like basically the analytics side of it, using keep trade cut and all these things. So that's what I use. I say, hey, what do you see here? What do you look here? You know, how would you do that? But then at the end of the day, it's my decision too. Like, all right, this is how I look at it. This is where I go with it. And like you go from there. Cause I do think sometimes when I get questions, I get a lot of DMs ask me questions for dynasty teams. I always end it with like, this is how I view it. I give my explanation, but like, you got to trust yourself to your gut. You got to kind of understand where you're going. If you're leaning opposite me, then go opposite with you. And that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that pretty much covers the evaluation part. So
yeah,
think we want to talk a little bit about trades.
Oh yeah. Everybody always talking about trades there. But again, I hope you kind of got into it. I know we got some question here. I appreciate you guys dropping your trades. You can drop your trades. We'll get into them. But I do want to go over your philosophy. This is our first show. Yep. We'll be doing these trades at the end of every show. We're talking about them. Of what are your tendencies in trading? What do you kind of look for when you trade? Cause I do know there's some trading can be a nerve-wracking thing for newer owners, even veteran owners. I know some dynasty managers that struggle that have been doing it for a while.
Yeah, so first and foremost, and we've already touched upon it, so I'm not going to go in too deep, but it is knowing your league mates, managers' tendencies, how they react, how they like to negotiate. I want to know which door I'm knocking on if I've got a vet that I'm looking to sell. I want to know who sells their first rounders every year. I want to know who will, you know, just overvalue based on recency bias. I want to know who's very risk averse. And anytime there's any off-field circumstances surrounding a player that I may want to add, I want to know those things so I can go to that door and already kind of have a deal crafted because I know that there's a good chance that, I don't want to say take the bait because ultimately it just feeds their tendencies, I guess, is the way I'm looking to frame it.
Yeah, you have to. I have little nicknames for some of them, like Geezer Lover, like little things like that. Like, I know this guy. Like, I understand. Like I said, I really love the mythology behind rookie drafts. Because I want to know where they, you know, are they, where their tendencies are. Will the guy, like, if a guy loves Quentin Johnson, he's going to love Keon Coleman from Florida State. That same profile. And I'm like, okay, well, you took a shot there. Is he going to learn from maybe his possible mistake? Or is he going to fall right back in with Keon Coleman or some of these guys? Or, okay, you know, when you're looking at, you know, how does he use picks? Do they move up? Where are their picks at? Are some guys willing to, like, if their tier break is there, can I take 2 seconds, back end seconds, and move up into the first, early second round, like in that area? Like, knowing the tendencies of them, I love that stuff. I love kind of where to kind of look at rookie drafts, where to target, because the rookie draft is the most fun part for me, because I love dynasty and that's really where it kind of gets into that team building. So I love kind of going in there. What other part? I like your second part. I love this thing because I want to talk about it. So what are you talking about here with leverage?
So when you know a tendency or you know somebody's propensity to do a certain thing,
yeah,
and when you evaluate, because I always preach evaluate everybody else's rosters as well, because you want to know what the other roster makeup is for the other 11 owners in your league. What are they? Where are their weaknesses? But just because you're applying a lens, leverage only exists if you're looking through the same lens as the other owner that you're dealing with. If they have a different lens, if they value something different than you do, I mean, I've looked at rosters and I'll be like, my God, this is a win-win trade. This is perfect. You know, it's going to strengthen them. It's going to strengthen me. This is a no-brainer. And I reach out to that manager and I send that offer and they're like, yeah, what are you doing? This is terrible. And it's like, whoa, how do you not see what I see? How are you living in castles in the sky? Because you obviously haven't evaluated your roster the way that I do. And I think that's important to know, because a lot of times, you know, you feel insulted when you think you've crafted a great deal and you send it off and the other person's just like, nah, no thanks. It's difficult because you want to preach, you want to say, well, you should think the way that I think, you should see what I see, but that's just not how the world works. And that's not how dynasty football works. So you got to understand that everybody's got a different prism. Everybody's got a different lens, and you've got to be okay with that and work around that.
Yeah. And that just comes to understanding kind of like, you know, you'll know too, who's constantly updating their roster or looking at how, like, you'll find that you have probably two or three people that are just like you in the league. And you're like, okay, I know how they kind of operate. I know kind of how these guys operate with that, but I understand leverage, you know, it's funny. Cause yeah, it can be a myth. And also, like, a guy that has like a bunch of older running backs, he might like that. And it's like, I can't go grab those running backs. He wants them. Like, I can't get a second out of, like, you know, Joe Mixon last year, or maybe Saquon Barkley. He's still valuing Saquon pretty high. So there is all of these that, cause I've done these dynasty consultations and this guy's like, oh, he plays it like redraft. I'm like, well, you know that now. If he plays it like redraft and he's really still building like a redraft team, use that now. Flip it. Like, the leverage that you think you might not have, now you maybe do if you look at it from a different lens too, like looking at teams like that. I think that's important. I know we talked about this part, negotiate with deal makers, kind of lean in those active traders there. We've kind of mentioned that. If you want to mention anything on that, we can, or we can jump right into D, kind of what you're talking about there.
Well, actually, I just want to say one other thing as we're talking about the leverage. Just understand too that lenses can get tainted and lenses can change, right? Two different aspects of it. So let's say you're playing in a super flex league and the guy's main quarterback or the person, lady's main quarterback goes down, gets hurt, and you think that you're making a fair deal. Well, the lens could be tainted on the manager you're dealing with from the standpoint that they know they just lost somebody. So everybody's going to try to take advantage of that person. You know, like, every deal I'm going to get is terrible because I'm the one that's dealing with an injury. So that lens can be tainted from the standpoint that, you know, you're trying to make a fair deal, but they already think that they're going to be taken out behind the woodshed. So their defense mechanism is up and they're not looking at it as a value on value offer. They're already jaded to a certain degree. The other thing is lenses change. We talked about, you know, is this person going to draft the same as they've always drafted? There's nothing I enjoy seeing more, because it when somebody gets better at dynasty, it raises everybody's game. And if you've got somebody in the league that's playing terrible or doesn't understand dynasty or just learning dynasty or has made a bunch of bad decisions, and all of a sudden they get better, they start to evaluate better, they start to draft better, they start to, you know, just put different strategies in. I remember playing in a league where there was one particular manager that was awful. And I almost thought at one point they had hired somebody to start running their team, because all of a sudden they started making some really shrewd deals. And I was really impressed. And it come to find out that they just put the time in. They started watching podcasts and they started reading articles and they started utilizing services where Twitter where, hey, what if I do this? What if I try this deal? And they got better. So again, so the lenses can change as, you know, as the seasons go on. But you're
I want to touch your point there. I'll let you move on and we'll talk about it. Is when you're talking about like how, like, yeah, the quarterback goes down, is, and it just, it rang a bell because it happened in one of my leagues. The guy lost his quarterback and he needed one. So people did throw out a bunch of these crappy offers for guys. So one thing, the strategy that I use is I wait. If they don't make a move after a few days, like, I will send them an offer like Friday night, Saturday, that it seems more fair for them. Like, so I actually moved Gardner for a second. Gardner Minshew for a second. I didn't need Gardner Minshew. He needed a quarterback. I felt like a second was probably the right value because people were asking for a first. They were asking for all these things. And I waited to basically when I felt like, hey, he's probably over like the initial shock of losing one of his, like Joe Burrow, whoever it was. All right, he's done with like these low ball offers. And I sent him the deal and he accepted. And he said, thank you for sending me a fair offer. And me and that guy are going to be able to deal at any point because I created that relationship with him now where he knows I'm not trying to go get him. Now, there's always times you can extract value and do those type of things. But you got to be very tactful how you deal with your league mates too.
Yeah. And that leads perfect segue right into the very last conversation point that I wanted to make, is that every interaction that you have with a league mate is a chance to either build or burn a bridge. And, you know, I got into a conversation actually this week on Twitter with, I think it was Nick Whalen, and we were talking, somebody had made the comment that I've never seen anybody burn a bridge. And, you know, it's just, it's value. And if it's not what I want, I move on and I don't worry about the, you know, personal aspect of it. And, but that's just not how most people operate. Most people make decisions slathered in emotion. They just do. And so when you're having these negotiations, when you're having these conversations with folks, when you send out that offer on a Friday night, that's a fair deal, you are building a relationship. And in redraft, it's not as important, especially if people change in the league every year and you get three or four new faces. But in a dynasty league that has a continuity, that has the same faces year over year, you want to build those relationships and you want to make sure that they view you as a shrewd trader, but a fair trader, and somebody that is active enough that will respond right away. Mm-hmm. I always want to be, I forget what I had tweeted the other day. I think it was, I want to be the box jellyfish. I don't want to be a shark that, you know, everybody's afraid of. I just want to be floating along in the water, harmless, and all of a sudden I can make a fantastic deal. But I want to be active and I want to communicate. And the last piece to this that I'll share is, when we talk about knowing, it all comes back to knowing the managers in your league and how they operate. One of the best ways to do that is after a good trade in the league chat. Because whenever somebody makes a positive trade, all of a sudden they like to share a lot of information, whether it's about their processes, whether it's about, you know, the what prompted them to make the deal. And you can find out a lot about how they critique, how they evaluate, how they judge, how they value players. You can find out all of that. If they make a really good deal, even if you're not involved in it, chat them up, because that tends to be the time that people really like to talk about their game plan.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That is, I did this because of this or whatever the case, they like to brag. There's a little bit of bragging going on.
Absolutely.
With the deal. Yeah. I think that's very good advice there. All right, let's get into, I know we got a lot of comment. I know we got a lot of these questions here, so you could drop your trades. If you have your trades, all we ask you to do is give as much context as you possibly can. We're going to pull some from our Patreon that we have. We're going to pull some from you guys on YouTube. So make sure you like and subscribe the video too. If you are not subscribed, we're trying to get to 4,000 this week. So if you could subscribe, that would be great. But I have our first one. I'll read it and we'll kind of work through it and we'll go into it. So it's 12 teams, super flex, start 10, tight end premiums 0.5. He has Allen, Kyler, and Watson. So Josh Allen, Kyler, and Watson. Hall of Chain, Lamb, Nico, Addison, London, JSN, Reed, and Wicks. Pitts, Likely, and Otten. Then he has picks 202, 205 through 7. So should he send London? So Drake London at 108 for Gibbs. So where are you leaning on this one?
just what, so I like to do two things. I like to use two lenses on this since we're talking lenses. I always like to do it in a vacuum and see how I would react in a vacuum. And then I like to add layers of context. And again, not being in this league and knowing market value for players or trading tendencies, we don't have a ton of context. So I'll lean a little bit more to the vacuum side in this particular instance. I mean, looking at it for 10 seconds and off the top of my head, I would prefer to have Gibbs in a vacuum. So I think, go ahead.
Yeah, I think for me, when you're looking at that 108, it sits outside the tier of like legitimate guys. So like there's going to be guys at 108, 109, but like my tier right now is like 101, 102, and then 103 to like 106. 107 is kind of that middle tier, what you think of like Roma Dunze or maybe one of these quarterbacks pops up. 108's outside of that. So if you can get Gibbs for something that's outside of probably the top two tiers in your rookie drafts, plus London, who I like London. I think he could definitely step up, but with Lamb and Addison, JSN, you know, Nico being there, like that's the piece I'm okay affording to get rid of, and having Gibbs, who I think could be running back one, and with Hall and then Achan, if he can stay healthy, I mean, I would much rather have the Gibbs side. That's how I look at that deal.
Yeah. The only layer that would bother me at all, and it doesn't really, but it would just be, again, the layer of context. How does your league value running backs? And if you play in a league that, you know, running backs are kind of an afterthought, and it's because let's face it, philosophy changed, right? For quite a few years, it was billed by wide receiver and wide receiver only and zero running back. And then in the last few years, we've seen all of a sudden, well, wait a minute, bell cow running backs really make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so there's been kind of a needle switch, you know, the pendulum has swung a little bit more towards running back value as a whole in the industry or in the community. But if it's a league that, you know, values running back, the other thing that, you know, is important here is it's 12 teams in the league. And if it was a 10 player league, you know, it would make me like Gibbs even more, because in a 10 player league, you're worried about the star player at every turn. But I still say if you were 14 team league or 16 team league, I might lean more wide receiver, but in this particular instance, I'm going Gibbs.
Yeah. And that's a good point too. If you're out there listening in 10 team, I get a lot of questions about 10 team leagues. I want the best asset available. Give me the best player. I don't care what it is. Yep. I don't care what it takes. I want to accumulate as much talent as I can. Depth is overrated in 10 man leagues.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a good roster.
Yeah. Go get dudes. Just get dudes and just collect them. And in the off season, you don't need to fill spots. You just get value. You find the best players. And you don't worry about that. Cause that's a good point there. Cause I do get a lot of questions about that. As you go up in teams, then I don't mind consolidating a little bit of talent, having more tier two guys, maybe depending on how you build out that roster. I thought this was an interesting question, and I think it's a good one. So it says one back-to-back championships. So he has Kels. So are you trying to go for Kels for three for championships, or are you offloading for Kyle Pitts? I have an offer in my inbox and I am unsure. So straight up Kyle Pitts, for Travis Kelce. And this is a tough one. I think a lot of managers are dealing with this decision right now with Kelce. So I think that is, I think, why it's important for us to kind of talk about it here. Where are you at with Kelce and maybe this deal overall kind of with his dynasty value?
So a lot of it would really depend on the rest of the roster, because I'd want to know if I've got enough stability built. And I would think, again, reading between the lines, back-to-back championships. He didn't win back-to-back championships solely because of Kelce. Yeah. So I'm sure it helped. But in this particular instance, with probably a new coaching, you know, obviously a new coaching staff, maybe Bill Belichick, new offensive coordinator, what does that look like in Atlanta? Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to churn my roster. That just was a philosophy that I've always had playing Dynasty. I always want to make sure if there's an opportunity where I can shave years off of a particular position, I'm looking to do that. And again, based on the back-to-back championships, there's probably enough there to sustain this. I would make the deal and I would move off Kelce now, because this is your last window, really.
Yeah, which is funny, because I always thought last year would be going to be the last window. But like this really feels like Kelce's like, you know, he obviously didn't hit the 1,000 yards. He still averaged 14.8 fantasy points per game, but that was in some boom weeks. I think when you're looking at overall, if you're looking at it based on those taking out some of those boom weeks, he was a struggle to play there. I would definitely offload the Pitts probably, because I think, like you mentioned, if you already have that team built up, this is the time to really retool. Like, you're retooling that position. Those other positions you probably don't. If Pitts hits, his value is going to go through the roof again. So if Pitts comes out, then you can still move Pitt. Like, there's ways you can kind of do that. Kelsey's value is flatline. This is his value. Pitts still has that ability. So I will always kind of lean towards that too. Like, if this player who I think could maybe take that next step, like, literally, if Pitts scores like 3 touchdowns next year, his value is going to shoot through the roof, like, in the first 6 weeks, just because of the way we talk about him. So that's kind of how I would look at that deal as well. Next one, Jack, appreciate you dropping in here. Traded Zay Flowers and Justin Herbert for Puka Nacua, Romeo Doubs, a first, second, and third. I would love to know where the first is at. Like, if I could know where that first is at, I definitely like that. In a vacuum, like, so I can kind of go here. I don't love trading super flex quarterbacks like Justin Herbert and not tearing down to another quarterback, unless that first is in the top 3. If I can get Caleb or maybe Drake or one of those quarterbacks, even then it's a crapshoot. Like, look at Bryce Young, look at some of these quarterbacks that we have seen in the top half. I'd probably lean the Justin Herbert side without context of where that first is at.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that first is key. Would have been even more tempting if potentially you could have swapped a second and a third for a 25 first. Might have made a little bit of difference. The part that's hard is in a super flex, and I'm assuming this is super flex.
Yeah.
Moving a quarterback, you know, especially a young, talented top tier, even though he didn't perform exceptionally this year, he still has the mystique and the perception. And bottom line, perception sometimes matters more than actual value. So the piece that's hard though is you're also moving Zay, and so I know Puka's the upgrade, but you're still moving a wide receiver that has a potential, you know, nice trajectory in front of him along with the quarterback. So it would be difficult for me unless that 24 first was top two, really.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's get through some of these. We're going to get through some. We got 5 minutes left, guys, because if I don't get off in 5 minutes, my wife is going to come in here and yank me out of this room. Another one here, 12 teams start 11. So starting 11, so bigger kind of start areas there. Appreciate you telling us. Sin Purdy, Judy, Brian Robinson to get Amon-Ra St. Brown and the 205. So assuming Superflex. I'm just going to assume Superflex at any point.
And it's not Bijan, right? We're talking Brian.
Brian, yes. Brian Robinson. And then he said his current quarterbacks are Allen, Lamar, Purdy, and then Aiden O'Connell. So he does have Allen, Lamar there. So that he could maybe afford to move off of Purdy here. This is a tough one. This is a really tough one for me. Because in start 11, that's
and who did he have? Can you go back to the other?
He had Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Brock Purdy, and Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah, I'm taking Sun God. There's no two ways about it. I'm gonna take him and move Purdy, and that's the whole point in a super flex of having a viable third quarterback is to be able to, especially if he's only got one true wide receiver one on that team, like a CeeDee Lamb or somebody like that, and he can add St. Brown to that, then it's a no-brainer for me.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I don't mind that. I do think Purdy's getting underrated still in Superflex a little bit. But I with the context of who his quarterbacks are, yes, absolutely. Yes. Like that is
the key.
That's the key. And that's what you try to do. If you're drafting that third quarterback, Purdy was a great target this year because he went way, you know, I think it was QB 27, 28 in startups, if I can remember what DLF's ADP was. And you just sit there and you just boom. And you know what? Now you have, you know, Allen, Lamar, Amon-Ra now for a guy that you just drafted in round 25 or whatever it was last year. All right, big one here. One quarterback. I'm assuming it's just PPR.
Half point.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. See, I'm old too. Yep. Half point PPR. You know, start 9.7 tight end. So he's got Kyler, Devin Achane, Zamir White. Then he got Jamar Chase, JSN, Marvin Harrison Jr. already, London Downs, Wandale, and then he got Kincaid, Komet. I have the 101, 103, 109, 112, 206, 209. Any trade ideas on improving it? Oh, so you want trade ideas here. You have a lot of capital. So the thing is, if you already have Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm assuming this is probably a Devy league, if I had to guess. So you probably have that. If it's already a Devy league, I do think the capital is definitely a little watered down. Depends how deep your league. I need to know how deep your Devy league is. Like, to answer this question, like, I need to know how deep it is. I need to know if your rookie draft is the same as like your incoming freshman draft, because then first have more value that way. So then you can kind of use those and pivot off of them. In one quarterback, I love your wide receivers. I think you're doing a good job of building through the wide receiver position there. I would definitely think you're with Kyler and those wide receivers, you're pretty close to contending. I would definitely maybe target some veteran guys with those back end picks, some running backs, maybe if you're ready to kind of pop in there. But you're close. I think you're very close there. Definitely target, you know, some of those running backs with those back end picks, but I don't know how to necessarily tell you what to do with those early picks without knowing kind of who's there.
Yeah. And the focus area though, for you, as far as improving, is definitely building up a little bit more running back depth and, and maybe, you know, getting a bell cow if possible. And if the Devy league is small, like if you've only gone, you know, 12 deep and the rest of the only thing is, this is a really down year for running backs in this class. But potentially maybe you can package a few of those picks up and get somebody that's in that, you know, running back 10 to 15 range that could help add some depth to your squad.
I would definitely be targeting running back twos in that 10 to 15 range, but pass catching guys like from last year, I'd love Singletary going to Houston. Look for the offenses they go for, their profiles that they have, but definitely target the guys that are going to fit in the schemes. Look for the free agents guys that they bring into, like coaching staffs, the target guys, especially new coaches. And like, one thing I think a lot of people, like I really kind of look at, is when these guys come in, we have a lot of new coaching, coach openings this year. Look to see who they target in free agency, because I do think those guys get utilized a little bit more and they'll ride those guys out. I think Singletary is just to ride them out. We're going to ride his contract and we're going to ride him out.
So real quick, I think here's a great question for the analytics guys, and maybe they can figure this out, but I'm curious the impact on pass catching running backs in a half point PPR league. I've never played in a half point league, and I don't know if pass catching running backs in that particular situation offer more bang for the buck in a half point league than they do in a full PPR league. I would be curious about that.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I think that if anything, the way I look at it is, if you're going to be targeting those running backs in that range, it's just always based on value. Yep. Like, if you can get some of those guys for cheap, yeah, I'll take a shot at them and go there. All right, we're going to get through a few more, and then we got to get out of here. And again, we're going to be diving into this. We'll be doing this every 2 weeks. We're going live. We're going to be taking your questions. We'll do different topics, those type of things. So 12-team super flex, 0.5 tight end premium. Should I trade the 104 for Michael Pittman in a 25 first? Does the price get better than this closer to the draft? I already have four quarterbacks: Mahomes, Kyler, Dak, and Bryce. All right. It's tough. I like Michael Pittman, but I do think from a points per game standpoint, he's a very middling wide receiver too. I just redid my rankings, which I hate doing because it takes me forever. But I think I have like wide receiver 16, 15 in that range. I like a first, but I think you can get more as it gets closer to the draft.
So I think the general rule of thumb, and I think it holds in this particular instance, is you don't trade a top five pick in January. And unless you're completely blown away and it's exactly what you want. The fact that you're asking means you're kind of on the fence. And in this particular instance, that 1-4 in a super flex is only going to increase in value over the course of the next couple of weeks. And I would wait. I think that deal, Pittman in a 25 first, will be available in March if you still want it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, everybody, there's a window. Like, for me, I would love to get the 104 from Michael Pittman, probably 25 first right now. Like, if I'm buying, like, hey, I'll go get a top five pick. There's a window when we're looking at this. you know, the combine, everybody gets hyped. Everybody loves a combine. They see their guy, they start building it. You get all the Twitter highlights of these players and out there in their shorts, and everybody loves it. The Senior Bowl, there's hype windows. The draft comes around. That's when really the hype goes on. Like, that 104 is going to be an elite pick. There's definitely more you could probably get for that pick. And the way I do it, so I do combined rankings. So I already have the 24 class combined with Dynasty. So if I'm looking there and I think who's going to be there at the 104, if it's Neighbors, like, I think Neighbors is my wide receiver 9 overall right now. I'm not looking to tier down to Pittman range. If I already think he can be wide receiver 9 in Dynasty, I'd be looking in that 10, 11, 12 range. But that's just something we have it on our Patreon, but I'm just degenerate that way. I have these combined rankings. I actually have combined rankings all the way through the 2027 class. So, like, I already have the incoming freshman in my combined rankings, which, you know, it takes a little while to get into that, but all right, let me see. There was one other. All right, we'll do this one, and then everybody else, I'll get you guys. Drop them in the comments. If you drop them in the comments, I'll come back tonight, and Leo will come in, and we can kind of help you in there. So drop them in the YouTube comments. If you drop them in the YouTube comments, underneath the video, I would definitely dive into it. Last one though, in Superflex Titan Premium, I badly needed a second quarterback to begin a retool. I have Burrow and Pickett. Yeah, oh, Kenny Pickett just can't beat out Mason Rudolph. I sent the 112 plus Quentin Johnston for Justin Fields in week 16. Thoughts on the deal? I love that deal.
Love it.
I'll take Justin Fields for that.
Yeah. I would have probably moved the 1-6 even in Quentin Johnston for that.
Yeah.
So definitely a great deal.
Yeah, smash that deal, Jonathan, because that's pretty cheap in terms of what you're looking for Fields. And if you can pivot off Quentin Johnston for Justin Fields, you do that any day. You do that any day there. All right. Well, hey, this is our first episode of Deciphering Dynasty, of Dynasty Audit. We will be back in 2 weeks, kind of diving into the next topic we decide. It took us about 2 weeks to come up with this show sheet. We're really building this out, trying to be thoughtful. You know, leave us the comments, reviews, you know, let us know, DM us. You can find our Twitter accounts on there and kind of dive into it. But Leo, I thought this went well. Appreciate you hopping in.
Yeah, it was a blast. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next one in 2 weeks.
All right. Appreciate you guys. We will check you guys in 2 weeks. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it.